You're listening to Speak Free with Simon O'Connor, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Well, we've obviously had the United Kingdom's general election last week, and a few days before that, we had my friend Sunil Sharma on talking to us about what was going to happen. Well, now it's happened. Labour has won in some ways, and we'll talk about this, but in some ways has won in a landslide. But Sunil, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me back. Delighted to be here.
Well, having you back is obviously a good sign, but look, you've got some fantastic insights and listeners appreciated it. And as I say, of course, the election's now been had. Tell us what happened for those who somehow have missed every newspaper and TV station in the last few days.
Well, as expected, a massive win for Labour. They've secured 412 seats. You need 326 to get a majority. They've got 412, so they have a we have a Labour government, and that was 211 seats more than what they got last time. The Conservative Party lost 251 seats, so they're now on 121. So they have significantly lost many seats, and a real sort of complete restructuring of the Conservative Party, I'm sure, will be happening now in the coming days, weeks, and months. So, yeah, a really massive win for Labour. Not too surprising. It's pretty much what everyone expected. A few differences in terms of the amount of votes Labour actually got in the actual numbers. And interestingly, some high-profile Conservative MPs are no longer in power, some that were even in the cabinet. And so, yeah, it seems like a real rebuilding job now for the Conservative Party, because yeah, it's a pretty shocking result on their side, and a promising moments now for the Labour Party.
Well, let's start with the Labour Party, the winners. So, well, actually, allow me to back up a moment there. In some ways, in this election, you say so a massive change in terms of the parliament over there. But was it a case of Labour winning or the Tories losing? I know that's simplistic, but, you know,
yeah,
what would you say?
I think there's probably little doubt that it is more a sign of Tories losing. I mean, Keir Starmer, the new British Prime Minister, his vote share was not more than what Labour got in 2017 or 19, which they lost both elections. So they didn't actually get significantly more votes than what they have done in the last 14 years since the Conservative Party been in power. What we've seen are massive changes. A lot of the Conservative voters either not voting or voting for reform. And so what that kind of led to is almost a fight for the more right side of centre in terms of parties that are going to vote for a Conservative or reform, and leaving the left open for Labour. So the Conservative Party, of course, hasn't really helped itself in the last few years. We've had four leaders in the space of around 4 years. So again, it's not been a very stable Conservative Party. A lot of in-house fighting that's gone on even in the last year or so. Lots of resignations, lots of maybe complacency in 14 years of power. So some real serious questions about the Conservative Party. Labour, for their benefit, I think they've been very good at almost staying very quiet, appearing to be a bit more serious and have their house a bit more in order than the Conservative Party, whilst not really offering much of what they're going to do. I think they've almost just let the Conservative Party almost self-implode, which they no doubt have. So vote share wise, Labour really haven't done a lot in terms of increasing that. But what we have seen is that the Conservative Party really feel the impact of their members, their voters just not coming out and voting for them. And hence why we've seen some really high profile MPs lose their seats. People like Liz Truss, former Prime Minister, Penny Morden, Grant Shapps, these are, you know, really significant senior Tories who lost their seats. So it's a real restructuring for the party, for sure.
Well, New Zealanders may remember Penny Mordaunt as, well, not only her political role, but held the sword of state, I think, during Her Majesty's... Oh, no, during the coronation, I apologise, during the King's coronation. So, yeah, she's a big name. Sir Jacob Rees-Mogg, I know he was controversial in some ways, but another big name. I think, actually, we just might need to tease one thing out here, because you've talked about vote share, and I think, and correct me on any of this, but... For New Zealanders, we operate under a MMP or a proportional system. So if you get 30% of the vote, then you get 30% of the seats. But of course, the UK continues under a first-past-the-post system. So you've been comparing the overall percentage a party gets of the vote versus the seat. So I'm looking at some stats here rather than being amazing and knowing them. But Labour got 34% of the vote. But it's actually got 63% of the seats. And I think I heard you right that basically Sir Keir, as in Starmer, the Labour leader, he's led them to a victory. But is it that he's got fewer votes than Corbyn got or something
in terms of
percentage?
That's correct. He got fewer votes than Jeremy Corbyn did. And so it does maybe see – it's a tough one, actually. I am a Conservative member, so you know people could argue a bit biased there. But you know, if you look at Reform and Lib Dems, is a really good example. You know, Reform is a new party formed by Nigel Farage. They got approximately 4 million votes, and they only got four seats. Lib Dems got 3.5 million votes, and they've got 72 seats. So that there is something within our system that I think probably does need some sort of correction, because we are seeing the vote share and the percentage of people voting not necessarily representing the MPs that are getting selected. So there is definitely some sort of divide there. I think Sir Keir Starmer, I think his next probably battle in the next few years is to try and win over some of these Conservative voters or people who didn't vote, because as mentioned, he's not really done that, and he's not had to do that, in all fairness. So I think that will probably be his challenge now going forward, to see whether he can attract. And I think the big question now for the Conservative Party is what they do going forward. They've tried a much more social, if you like, a more left-leaning typical Conservative Party, and it clearly hasn't worked. And now they must re-engage and see, they don't have as many people in, they've only got 121 MPs now to really sit there and have these discussions with, but all 121 now will play a much more important role than they would have 6 months ago or a few days ago.
Oh, I can definitely relate to it. When the National Party got completely decimated here in New Zealand, I think there was 33 or 34 of us. I mean, it was quite the experience that you go from having, 50 or so, in New Zealand context, of course, there's only 120 MPs compared to your 600 and something. But yeah, you go from a room full of people to all of a sudden there's sort of 34 of you. It's like, oh my God. Yeah. But this will be, massive, massive issues for the Conservatives. I mean, who might be the first or second cabs off the rank? Who's looking to replace Sunak? Because he's been re-elected as an MP, but he has promised to step down as leader. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So, I mean, it's a real tough one in terms of what the Conservative Party now go for. We've obviously had quite, if you like, more centrists. We're going to call them, I would argue almost quite close to left-leaning. But, the standout names, I think there's four or five standout names. Kemi Badenoch, Tom Tugendhat, Preet Patel, James Cleverly, and Suella Braverman. I think they're the big names that everyone's going to expect this fight off to happen. The more right side, you'd see Suella, Pretty, and maybe Kemi fighting. The more sort of centrist middle would be more your James Cleverly, Tom Tugendhat, and even I think Robert Jenrick is another name that's popped up in the last day or so. So there doesn't seem to be a clear favourite. I think Kemi Badenoch was very popular during the leadership election. So before Liz Truss became our leader and the prime minister, we had the process of MPs being chosen. They go through the system of when it gets down to the final two, then it goes to the members, and the members get to vote from the final two. But before it gets to the final two, the MPs themselves get to pick who goes for each round. And Kemi Badenoch wasn't able to make it to the final two. She didn't get enough support from the MPs, but the actual membership base, she would have won. She would have got the most votes. She was the most popular. So she is probably one of the favorites again, because she does seem to have that following. However, a big thing with her, and again, the Conservative Party is quite split at the moment. She'd probably seen more on the right side of the Conservative Party, and it very much now depends on what the rest of the party, what the people, what the few MPs, what they want to go for, what their next sort of step is. I would hope to believe somebody like Kemi Badenoch would get an opportunity, but there's every chance it could be more of a Tom Tugendhat kind of profile of candidate.
Well, I think for what my view onto UK politics is worth, it's going to be brought. I find that when parties go through devastating losses, it sort of just rips the heart, ticky out of the MPs, and a whole lot of different agendas and that come forward. So we wish you guys well. I better declare my hand. I know Tom quite well, actually. He and I chaired the Foreign Affairs right. Committee together. That doesn't cause me particular bias. But I should also ask, slightly tongue-in-cheek, can Conservative Party members just put their hand up? Could we have you leading the party, or that's not in the Constitution? Yeah.
No, it would have to be one of the sitting MPs. So I think there is not a lot of choice now in terms of the 121. But it'll be interesting. You know, few people have floated the idea of maybe one of the MPs taking a more interim role. We have an interim leader whilst we do a proper process. From my understanding, is they're going to go straight to decide who the leader is in the coming weeks and days. I don't think it'll be that much of a long, drawn-out process. But now I think we're seeing people already starting to pitch themselves forward. Swella Brabham did a conference today highlighting the problems the problems have been with the Conservative Party. So it seems I think she's almost starting to make her pitch already. And that will only just grow with some of the other MPs. And then the big question for the Conservative Party is what they do with Nigel Farage's reform. Do they simply ignore them and just decide by being a bit more of a conservative group that they can almost push away reform, or do they welcome reform into their arms and say, you know, we want the four reform MPs to be included part of the Conservative Party, because this is a problem that the Conservative Party has not had to face in the last 10 or so years, where there is actually a right, there is another group on the right that are going for elections and going almost competing for the vote. So this is a real, I think, a dilemma for the next leader and the party in general.
Oh, massively. So again, New Zealand's been through this. I mean, we're so small, but we've been through this where, you know, parties, if you will, broke off from National. My colleagues and leaders at the time thought, you know, they're small, they're insignificant, nothing will come of this. A few of us, myself included, said, you know, you're better off dealing to these early, lest they become a force in themselves. And, well, they ignored them, and you know, New Zealand's in a situation now. Granted, the centre-right's in power, but has to coalesce with parties to the right of National. And, yeah, says me, you've got a challenge with reform. So listeners, to understand, so this is Nigel Farage's party. It got 14%, so 14% of the vote, but only 1% of the seats in Parliament. But at 14% of the vote, behind is at 24% for the Conservatives. It's substantial. And I saw Sunil a little, it must have been an Instagram reel or something, the day after the election, of Nigel in the back of the car with the Eminem rapper song, Guess Who's Back? Yes, I'm Back, playing. And he's having he's very chuffed. So is he happy with the result? And what's his plan from here, you think?
Oh, I think he'll be delighted with the result. They deserve a lot of credit for what they've done. You know, this is a party that really came from nowhere. A few weeks of campaigning, a few weeks of work, and they achieved incredible results. To get the 14% vote share is astonishing. There's many seats across England, Scotland, Wales, where Reform were number two. They got more votes than the Tories did. And I think that really just says how much of a message the Conservative Party really need to listen to, the fact that they are losing a lot of their core base. So, I mean, it's interesting what he wants to do next. For a long time, a lot of people saw him potentially positioning himself as the next leader of the Conservative Party. Maybe that looks like a reformed Conservative Party. I don't know. It's really tricky to see what he wants next. There's definitely an appetite for, I think, his style of leadership within both parties, Reform and Conservative. It just depends if he wants to. You know, he's somebody who initially said he wasn't going to stand as an MP and didn't want, you know, he was the honorary president of Reform. And this was only a few weeks ago. And he valued and thought that the election in America was more important. It seemed like he was almost vying himself for a role to be almost the ambassador between UK and US. I don't know if that's still what his next protocol is, what he next wants to do, or will he want to lead the charge to be the Conservative voice? I think the great thing of having him as an MP in British politics, it would definitely make, you know, Prime Minister questions a lot more entertaining. It will definitely he'll add a lot more spice, if you like, to the debates we see now. And I'm sure he'll be trying to hold Keir Starmer to accountability. But I think he's probably hoping the more coverage he gets, the more airtime he gets, which he now will as a member of parliament, maybe that will spark interest in him having a bigger role. But there's what I think Reform did in those few weeks is nothing short of amazing. There are some serious problems with Reform. They're a bit like a startup party. They I think had some really questionable candidates that they approved. But I think the big question now for the Conservative Party and Reform is what they do with each other, if they do anything. But it will be a serious question. I think somebody like Suella Braverman seems more keen to be working with the Reform Party. Robert Jenrick, who was a former immigration minister, is off the opposite spectrum, saying he wants absolutely nothing to do with Reform. So within the Conservative Party, they're split on how to deal with Reform. And then again, Nigel Farage may think to himself, well, in such a short space of time, I was able to get 14% of the vote share. Who's to say in 5 years' time that, you know, I don't even need the Tories anymore? So it'll be a really interesting face-off between the two parties.
Strikes me as there's some probably rough roads ahead for those on the centre-right. But turning then to Labour, of course, they've won. So Keir Starmer is now the Prime Minister. I mean, that happened very fast. Rishi drives to the palace, and next moment Sir Ken's there. So, I mean, what's Labour's first priorities now that they're in government, according to them?
Well, according to them, they said they want Britain to start building again. So housing is a big problem in this country. You know, we have net migration is very high. We have an ageing population. And we just don't have enough houses. And a lot of the time it's blocked, depending on areas in which you live in. I think university, everyone will agree we need more houses. Of course, no one wants them to be built in their back garden. Keir is putting forward a policy, which we'll hear more about in the next few days, about how I think they want to make it easier for houses to be built and less pushback. So that seems to be a fairly popular policy. I think most people would agree with that. Then the big debate, and as it has been throughout the last few years, and it will go back again to immigration, it'll go back to, again, about small boats in this country. So we have a lot of refugees that come in small boats from France to England. It's something that the Conservative government were unable to control. Lots of different ideas were put forward, none of them worked. And so I think immigration will be a really big question for Keir on how he wants to deal with it. There's no real clear, he's not really given us a clear answer. And then the next, even more as per usual in British politics, the relationship with the European Union. We've obviously left the European Union, but there's always a question of what that relationship will look like. So will it be closer, more distant? Keir, obviously, he campaigned to remain in the European Union. He did say he thinks we should respect the result of the referendum, but who knows what that now looks like. European Union definitely is happy that there is a Labour government in place. So yeah, there's a lot of questions that he will have to quickly answer. I think the positive thing for the Labour Party, they do have time, because right now you have a Conservative Party that is in an absolute mess. So they will pretty much for these next few weeks almost be unopposed in a lot of the policies they do. So I think it'll be very interesting to see what he does push forward. He has one of his things he has done is he's set a we have a overpopulated prison at the moment, prisons, and in terms of too many prisoners, not enough prisons, and he has said that he's going to release 40,000 prisoners in the coming weeks and days, which is an interesting policy. We'll hear more about which thousands are, but yeah. So
well, it's funny as you talk, for New Zealanders here listening will resonate, or rather this will echo with what Labour did when they came in, that they wanted to reduce the prison population by 30% was their target. It was the only target they achieved, by the way, showing my political bias. That didn't work out well for crime in New Zealand, I have to say. But jumping to the immigration, so was it Rwanda was one of the plans that the previous Conservative government had, that some migrants would go to Rwanda? Yeah. Is that now off the table?
That's off, and Keir Starmer outright said that won't be happening now. So he went as far as saying it's dead and buried, the Rwanda plan. So again, it will be interesting to see how he deals with both legal and illegal immigration. It is a serious problem in this country, and it's one of the things that you'd expect a Conservative Party really to deal with. That's you know, that's something you'd expect them to be able to handle. They simply haven't been able to. Rishi Sunak made promises and was unable to meet any of those promises. And it proved to be a lot more complex issue than a lot of people felt. So it's a big one for the Labour Party, because it's something that this will be something for Sakir that maybe he'll be able to win over a lot of the sceptics towards his government. And this will be probably his first major test. And again, this is the beauty and the fun of having a Nigel Farage in the House of Commons. You can almost guarantee one of his first speeches or one of his first line of attacks will be regarding immigration. And
he's quite the raconteur, Farage, as well. He knows how to get a headline. I mean, is Keir Starmer, look, obviously we're biased. We're both on the other side of the political fence to Labour, but is Keir Starmer competent from what you've seen? I mean, obviously, to his credit, he's now Prime Minister, but is he going to be competent, or has showed competency around policy? And I suppose the other element too, Sunil, is how's he going to hold the Labour Party together? Because as an outsider looking in, he's got some real radicals of sort of far left socialistic thought. You've then got some who are very strident when it comes to the Gaza-Israel situation. You know, it's not 300 and something happy, all aligned MPs he's got. He's got a whole bunch of new, very cock-a-hoot, there's a great word for radio. Tell me about his competency from what you can see, particularly to hold his party together.
Well, I think this is a massive, massive challenge. You know, the thing with Sakir, from his record, from the way he speaks, he seems very middle-grounded. Almost, I wouldn't quite say Tony Blair, but he seems fairly centralist. So I don't think there's anything that seems strikingly far left or anything of that sort. However, the big question for him and is the way he handles some of these far left MPs. You know, Sakir was part of Jeremy Corbyn's shadow cabinet, as was Angela Rayner, as was David Lammy, and these people are all part of his cabinet now. So there are some people within this party in senior positions that do hold strong socialist left-leaning policies. The big one, I think you've mentioned it there, is the Israel-Palestine. I mean, it cost Labour a lot of votes this election. They flipped quite a bit in terms of how they want to address this, in terms of their stance. So it's going to be really challenging for him to unite a lot of the left. I think what's really helped them is almost the incompetency of the Conservative Party, the division of the Conservative Party. They're almost united by they're almost like the hatred towards the Conservative Party, I think, has really united them quite strongly. I think going forward, I think the big question for Sir Keir is, does he have the strength to pull the people in his party in line when he needs to? Because that was something that Jeremy Corbyn was unable to do. And that's something that Sir Keir is going to have to really be questioned. I think as a man, as a person, he seems to be a really nice person. I don't think there's many people who could disagree with that. He seems to be well-mannered and calm and collective. Whether, you know, he is not the most charismatic leader, he's not a Tony Blair in that sense, maybe that will grow and that will change. But I think some of the bigger challenges for sure will be keeping his party in check. I think at the moment he's probably got a bit of an easier ride. You know, this is a party that hasn't been in power for more than 14 years. So I think a lot of people will be grateful for the fact that, you know, he's been able to lead them to his victory. But I think give it a few months, maybe a year or so, I think that's when things will get slightly more interesting for him. You know, there are people across this country, MPs, across this country who have won, whose first stance and first point of care has been what's going on in Gaza. And, you know, there's people who have campaigned purely on Palestine, Gaza, and protecting Palestine, who are now elected members of parliament. One of his own MPs, Jess Phillips, was ambushed. She won just about in Birmingham, I think, by 900 votes, and she was ambushed and heckled by Palestinian supporters in the crowd. She wasn't able to give her speech, which she normally give after winning. So there are some serious concerns, yeah, in terms of how this party are going to react to this, because they have moved away from the Jeremy Corbyn Hamas sympathizer kind of style of approach, where he's moved slightly away from that, and there has been some consequences from that. And now the question is how he will be able to lead these group of these MPs. I think the first few months and a while, I think a lot of these people will be very, very, very grateful for the fact that he's been able to do this. Give it a bit longer, as we saw with the Corbyn reign. I think that's when things will get a bit more interesting.
Could be a wild ride. I mean, final question is around this, the whole results overall. Is there any discussion in the UK around changing your electoral system? So, you know, as listeners were hearing earlier, something like Labour gets 34% of the vote and yet well over 60% of the seat. So is there a talk about, you know, scrapping first past the post and heading to some sort of proportional system, or are you guys well happy and tied to the traditional system?
You know, there was talk day after the election. You heard a lot from mainly conservative voices about the potential reform and changing the electoral. And there's since then, it's very much diluted and gone away. I don't think we'll see any major changes to the electoral system anytime soon in the UK, despite the fact that there's clearly seems some serious flaws. First of all, why would Labour want to change it? They'd be the party that would have to change it. And why would they, with the result that they got? That's the first thing. The second thing is, there just doesn't seem to be as much anger as a lot of people had, you know, you'd expect. So it seems to have died down. So I'd be very surprised if anything does change electoral system-wise. And if it is going to change, it's going to have to be from the Conservative Party. But like a lot of these things, it's, you know, let's say in 4 or 5 years' time, the election happens again and the Conservative Party win. Would the Conservative Party then say that we're going to change the electoral system, knowing that they've just won an election on the current system? It's one of those things where I think in the UK, it's just widely accepted that, you know, we know it's flawed, we know it's a bit silly, doesn't quite make sense, but we're just going to still keep doing it.
Turkeys don't vote for Christmas, so to speak. Though on the positive side, you know, it's sort of a bouquet out of all the fascinating results. The way that overall the UK handled the election, the graciousness of how Rishi Sunak, if you will, conceded defeat a number of MPs, how they conceded defeat, wishing their opponents, and now in this case the Labour Party, well, I just thought was in itself fantastic. And boy, what a contrast to what we're seeing in the United States and certainly France. We were saying just before and off air, you know, the French left win and then they still go and riot and burn places down. Whereas the UK, it was a very civil, quiet transition of power, which is wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I think to be honest, in all circumstances, generally the UK is pretty good when it comes to the sort of transitions of power and change of leadership. I think it is worth noting, and without taking that away, I think the other thing is this was almost a foregone conclusion. You know, I think it's a lot easier for the people to be quite gracious, and you know, a lot of these MPs would have known for a long time that realistically they're losing their seat as soon as this election is called. So there would have been, even before the election day, during the election day, you know, the vast majority of Tory MPs would have known they're not going to be coming back. And I think they would have had, they've had a long time to process that over the last 6 months, maybe a year. And there's never been, you know, every time there's been an attempt to try and change that trajectory from Rishi Sunak, it just hasn't worked. And so I think that probably would have helped in terms of, you know, these MPs being a bit more gracious and even probably more than usual, knowing that they're not going to be retained. Then they would have known that probably far before the actual election was staged. So I think that definitely made it easier. But I think there is a genuine, you know, I think the overwhelming thing that this country has shown is that there is an appetite for change. Now, the polling showed the top two things for Labour's victory are, one, that people wanted the Tories out. That was the number one reason people voted Labour. And number two is that they wanted change. Funnily enough, Keir Starmer, being the next prime minister, was ranked, you know, very, very low. I think it was only a few percent of people actually voted for Labour for Keir to be prime minister. That wasn't the main reason people voted Labour, which I'm sure he would want to change in the next few years. But the main two things, people wanting Tories out and people wanting change. And I think that sentiment would have gone through all the MPs. So it would have made processing the defeat and the victory for others a lot easier.
Yeah, as you say, they had time to process. So, Noel, thank you so much for taking the time to thoroughly take us through all that's happened. As I say, many New Zealanders follow the United Kingdom closely, certainly election. So it's really good to get firsthand what's happened there. So thanks again for joining us, and we look forward to having you back on and updating us about how this new government's going.
Oh, thank you, Simon. Thank you for your time today. Thank you.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.